You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Folks, if you'd like a copy of my best-selling first book, Tales of a First Round Nothing, head on over to ecwpress.com. If you'd like a copy of my second book, Tales with TR, Fights, Film, and Folklore, head on over to www.flankerpress.com. If you'd like either copy personalized, just add a note. Thanks for listening to my podcast, and happy reading.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network. New shows every day. Find us at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, let's get right into it. My next guest is a well-respected journalist right here in St. John's, Newfoundland, and we once shared broadcasting duties as we covered the QMJHL for the St. John's Fog Devils in the mid-2000s. He's one of my favorite media personalities in the world, with an affinity for classic rock, classic films, and classic hockey cards. He's worked in pro hockey as the director of communications for the AHL St. John's Ice Caps and is a good dad and good friend. He is a jazzy journalist, a fabulous fan, a dynamite dad, a blissful broadcaster, a reliable reporter, an amazing Atlantic Canadian. He's a King's College grad and a fabulous dad. He takes long naps and work for the Ice Caps. He's good with a word and is a pop culture nerd. He knows a guy named Max and lived in Halifax. He doesn't like to litter and is vocal on Twitter. He's never been to Brooks and is smarter than he looks. Oh, how I lie. He's a decent-looking guy. If it's a hint that you crave, his first name is Dave. Folks, the great Wayne Gretzky had a father named Walter. Please welcome to the show my pal, David Salter. Dave, how you doing?
I'm great. That was impressive, and I know you did your research because the napping part, you definitely got that down. I don't know how you knew that, but it's true. Anyone that knows me, I love the nap.
How about that jacket you're wearing? Where does this come? There's always a little modern touch of nostalgia.
It's funny. People ask me, you know, who's your favorite team or who's your – and I'm going to name drop here. I remember Pat Stapleton, the former Team Canada 72, Chicago Blackhawks guy. I remember he was here for Bob Cole's old golf tournaments he used to have. Anyways, I was chatting with Pat one time, and he was blown away with kind of my hockey history knowledge and stuff. And he said, you're not a hockey fan. He said, you're a hockey historian. And I think that's probably more accurate to what I am. So the Kings and all the old gear and memorabilia and stats and facts and stuff, that's kind of my bag, yeah. So,
you know what? Have you ever met Liam Maguire?
You know what? We connected on Facebook and Twitter and stuff, but it's so funny you say that. You know, he's someone on my bucket list that I want to meet because I sort of feel like we're kindred spirits. And I've heard about him for decades. Going back to my years, even in university, people would drop his name in it. So I've always sort of felt like he's kind of been around and I've heard of him. But like I said, we've connected on social media, but I would love to meet him. I think we'd get along, be a real hockey nerd fest.
Yeah, yeah, you definitely would. I met him a few years ago. I always wanted to. I'd read some of his stuff, and he's like one of those guys too. Well, I remember I sat down with him. I thought he was kidding. He said, I can name you any team that ever won the cup. He goes, that's a joke. I could have done that 20 years ago. But he goes, anyway. I said, oh, come on. And I said, what about 1912? He told me. Yeah. I said, what? And then I went, okay. And then he started to elaborate who was the Conn Smythe Trophy winner when I asked him about like 1952. And very, very specific stuff up in his head. It's one thing to do the research. It's another one, the thing to retain all of it.
That's right.
And anyway, not to make this about me, but we were talking the other night. I guess it is my podcast. anyway, but he's going to look into it. He thinks that my 21 years in between games is a Guinness World Record. So he's like, I was approached by somebody and they asked me that. And I said, I have no idea how to figure that out. I just assumed it was Gordie Howe because he played that game, remember, in the late 90s.
Right.
Because he wanted to play in like every five, 6 decades in a row. But my buddy brought it up. He's like, yeah, but he played in 1981, though. It was like 19 years in between, right? Not 21.
You might.
So who knows?
Liam would be one of those guys that would know that. But you'd certainly be in the running. Yeah, that's absolutely right.
He would be. Now, not to me, and a lot of people don't realize I was playing senior hockey the whole time and actually skating with the Growlers. You know, not their team with Matt Cook, but you know, when it, especially in the summer, they have a skate that's ongoing.
Oh, yeah.
Once in a while over the years, you know, they black aces down there for the guys that are injured, that sort of thing. But anyway, I'm not here for that reason. You're here in St. John's now, right? And your daughter's here.
Correct.
Just ask because every once in a while you gravitate. You're from Halifax.
Yeah,
correct?
My daughter's in Halifax now, and she's pursuing a career in music. But my son James is here in St. John's with me. He's finally got into sports. He didn't pursue hockey or anything, but he plays volleyball and he loves it. But I'm here, and like I said, I've had a pretty I suppose well-traveled would be a good way to describe it. I keep pinballing back and forth to Newfoundland, but I did the math the other day, and after I moved out of my parents' home, and I think that was in the early 90s, I've had 22 different addresses. So it's funny. My partner, she moved in with me recently, and she was complaining, God love her, about the move and everything else, and I was like, 22, baby, 22 times. So I've moved around a lot, but predominantly in the Atlantic Canada in the past little while.
Now, of that, I want to get your opinions on some recent stuff, but of those jobs, how did you enjoy being the director of communications for the Ice Caps? Because that was, that's probably the best hockey, quote unquote, hockey job you've had, I assume.
Yeah, I did some scouting with the Worcester Railers, actually, when I was in Halifax. I scouted university hockey there for them. That was pretty cool. And I made some great friends that I'm still friends with. And that's the great thing, as you know, more than anyone, the hockey world, the connections you have. I mean, I can probably go anywhere, especially because of my time with the Ice Caps, in North America, certainly the United States, and have someone I could, have a beer with or whatever. But the Ice Caps was awesome. I mean, working for Danny Williams, who was just a class act, who owned the team, and Glenn Stanford, who ran the team, was just as good as it gets. And, having that affiliation with the Winnipeg Jets and then the Montreal Canadiens. The Canadiens were so classy, such a classy organization to deal with. The Jets too, but the Canadiens is just another level. And I grew up a Montreal Canadiens fan, actually. So that was a really neat experience. And then, of course, the John Scott stuff. I did all the communications around that pretty much by myself, because the Montreal Canadiens really didn't want any part of it, when whole thing came with the All-Star game. And I remember finding out that he was going to the All-Star game, because there was that controversy, was even going to be eligible to go because he was in the American Hockey League at the time. And I remember calling the Canadiens, because you always wanted to run by things with them. We never wanted to act independently when it was players that they owned, and they owned all our players, basically. I remember calling them and saying, look, what do we do? What's going on? Like, I'm starting to get some phone calls. And they said, I remember the comms guy, his name escapes me right now, but also very classy guys. He said, David, he's your player. It's yours. And I was like, okay.
Oh, yeah.
And then the phone calls just started coming in all over North America. And I had to set up a news conference in from St. John's, because I didn't often travel with the team. A news conference it was in Bridgeport, Connecticut, because it was near ESPN, which is in Bristol, Connecticut. And so there's just that was crazy. And then, of course, he goes to the All-Star game, and then he's the All-Star game MVP. And it was bonkers. I mean, I was thinking about it today. Mitch Albom, the famous writer, you know,
Maury and Tuesdays with Maury.
Sent up a researcher to I guess meet John and everything else, and took me out to dinner for a movie that a screenplay that he was apparently writing. I don't know whatever happened to it, but that was bonkers. I mean, I worked in government communications in Newfoundland and in Nova Scotia as well, and done, you know, some interesting things, I suppose. I don't know if the public would find it that interesting, but the John Scott stuff around the ice caps was just bonkers and so cool. And he's such a good guy to deal with. So that was definitely the most, because again, you know, NBC, ESPN, I mean, it was arguably one of the biggest sports story. Well, it was. Sports stories of the year in North America, right? And so that was cool, you know, kind of being the point guy for that and developing a relationship with John. So
I think it would make top 50, depending on who you're talking to, for the decade.
Yeah, a guy gets traded from Arizona to Montreal, demoted to St. John's. So basically Arizona to St. John's. They couldn't send him to Siberia. The closest they could find was St. John's, right? Yeah. From Arizona, one end of the continent to the other.
I never thought about that. Yeah, from Arizona to St. John's, which are opposite for so many reasons.
Yeah, and tried to bury him there and hoped it would just go away in St. John's, you know, in Siberia. And it never did. And it was crazy. I remember when the trade happened, I was like, oh my God, because we knew what was happening. This whole thing, you know, with the All-Star game was started when he was in Phoenix. So that's why he was traded, was to just banish him and hope it would go away.
Yeah.
So when that trade happened, I was like, oh my God, this is going to be the biggest thing to happen in my career, because I just knew where this was going. I remember John called me and he's like, what? At this point, he didn't know what, if he was going to go to the All-Star game or if he was going to take his name out of it, because of course the NHL didn't want him doing it. I remember the first phone call I ever had with him. He's like, what do you think I should do? I was like, you're asking me? I don't know. Talk to your agent, talk to your family, you know, but I was kind of flattered, I suppose, in a strange way that he would even ask what I thought of it, because we'd never even really met before or hadn't met at all, actually. So that was cool. That was just a great experience. And we had the Calder Cup run in 2014, which was awesome. And, you know, still see a couple of those guys, you know, Josh Morrissey and Lowry in Winnipeg. Hellebuck was kind of just I think he traveled with us a little bit in that playoff series, but didn't play. But of course, later he did with the Ice Caps. So no, that was the Ice Caps experience was awesome. It was first class, and it was definitely a highlight for me and something I wanted to do.
Speaking of local hockey, okay, you just said that, you just reminded me there the St. John's Ice Caps went on a run.
Yeah,
think of the run that the Growlers just went on. Now you made some of all the people that commented. And I was asked, I didn't know all the facts behind the scenes. I knew that the deal wasn't desirable with the city. I knew that. And I think paying for like most, if not all, of the travel. And I knew it wasn't a great deal. I didn't see it shutting down halfway through the year. And again, because a lot of things for me, the thing that frustrated me was I get so many messages, as you can imagine, and so many people wanted an answer, and so many media and fans and everything from other places. I tried to tell them, I said, it's not like we had 300 fans a game. That's the way it's projected. And they said, and a lot of people, they lost their fifth team. No, we didn't. Mm. We didn't lose any pro team. We technically lost them from our city, but we didn't lose them because of lack of fans.
Right.
They moved because of NHL teams wanted to bring them closer, as you would. Right. I totally understand it. But the way they framed that whole story was as if there's no fans going to the games and that we've lost another one. Why give them? But can you straighten out some of that for people?
Yeah.
Might listen.
You know, I'm not that close to the situation with the Growlers. And, you know, as a reporter here in town, I interviewed Dean McDonald, you know, a few times about things. And to be honest, I never really felt like I was getting the complete story of the situation. And I'm not a devoted sports reporter. I mean, we miss Robin Short at times like this, the investigative journalist
we
do as a sports reporter. So, you know, I would kind of maybe do a story and then I wouldn't do one for you know, months on the Growlers. But here's my take on it. As you said, we lost the St. John's Maple Leafs to Toronto. We lost the St. John's Ice Caps, point one, to Winnipeg. We lost the St. John's Ice Caps to Montreal. So they all went to their, not nearby, basically the same city. So, you know, that had nothing to do with necessarily with the geography of St. John's. They were just moving it to their hometown for salary cap reasons. Yes. The Prowler situation was different. This was a team that we owned outright. So we had a little bit more control, or a lot more control, in this situation. You know, I know from my experience with the Ice Caps and being somewhat close to it, the city of St. John's has been difficult to deal with Mary Brown Center, et cetera, with the lease and all that stuff. But ultimately what it came down to the Growlers was that they weren't paying their bills at the end of it. And we had heard stories that this had been going on for a while with the Growlers, which is unfortunate. And then they blame the city of St. John's. But ultimately, in my opinion, if you sign a deal and you agree to those terms, you have to pay your bills. You can't say, well, our deal really sucked and that's why it didn't work. Well, you signed totally. That deal. You know, the onus is on you ultimately to pay those bills. And then I guess at the end of the day, they couldn't and the team left. What shocked me in some ways, well, I'm shocked actually when I think about it, with 8 games left, I think it was in the regular season, or 6 games.
Yeah, that's 6 games, and they were all home games.
That's unheard of. And I think that speaks to the utter frustration that the ECHL had with the Growlers organization, that they couldn't come to some agreement here just to play out the year. Because I kind of went through the history books, and I remember the San Francisco Spiders, the ECHL, folded halfway through the season. I remember that there was an Albany Choppers of the I think they were in the American Hockey League brief. It was the IHL. Again, you know, midway through the season. There's been a few of those over time, but not this late in a season. And I think it just speaks to the issues that the ECHL had with the Growlers management, that there was no love lost there. And I think it was probably there was issues of payment and money that had been going on for a while. And I think there was no sense of, you know, among the other owners in the ECHL, or no sympathy, I should say, probably among the other owners for that franchise. I think they just had enough, and it clearly speaks volumes that they had enough, that they were saying, we don't care if there's 6 games left or 2 games left, we're not paying a penny to help you out, or we're not going to reach out or reach into our own pockets to help you. So I think that says something about the frustration that the other teams of the league and the league, you know, head office had with the Growlers, for them to let that happen. It sounded like spiteful, but just I think there was no love.
Kind of spiteful.
Yeah. You know, I don't think there was any love lost with the ECHL. And the scary thing, as I said, Terry, on Twitter, is that I don't know where this leaves us.
No.
He was not coming back. I did some communications with the Memorial Cup in Halifax and talked to some of the it was David Branch, actually, and I don't think he's there anymore, but and he'd been there forever running the CHL. Yeah. And I think with Bobby Smith as well. I talked to a few people there about, you know, St. John's. I think they had ever come back, the Q would ever come back. No, I don't think there's any interest in that league coming back. And that's the league that really makes the most sense for us, junior hockey. Of course, as you mentioned, me and you did the TV games for the Growlers and with the Fog Devils. And it didn't work here. I think it was just mismanaged. And I don't think we'll get a second chance with that, unfortunately.
It was, though. So I remember that. Now, I remember of all the teams, the Fog Devils got the least fans. Hmm. Is that because we're not interested in junior hockey, or was it mismanaged? I really don't know. Because go ahead, sorry.
I think it's a bit of both. I don't think they really had hockey people there, like a Glenn Stanford or someone like that probably would have helped. And I think there was just a real snobbery or ignorance from the hockey fans here about junior hockey. And they just didn't really understand how good it was. And I think
they were coming right from having the St. John's Maple Leafs, Toronto's direct farm team as well, right?
Exactly.
Even in unsuccessful years, you've got big time prospects. And there was a lot, like, remember at the beginning, Felix Potvin, Yannick Perreault, right. Even I remember a couple of down years, Donald McLean gets 58 goals, like, you know, leads the league. There's all kinds of things that there was reasons to watch. And I found we ran out of those. I liked it.
Yeah.
A lot of fans seem to not dig it as much.
Yeah, and I think you're right. We were kind of spoiled with that great relationship with the Toronto Maple Leafs. And it's a shame because I don't think, like I said, there's any interest in the Q coming back, because they have territorial rights to the players here in Newfoundland. And that's ultimately, I think, all they're interested in. I think the thing with Newfoundland, it's not an easy place to get to. It's a pain in the arse to get to St. John's for the rest of these teams that are coming. And the expenses that our teams have incurred in paying the expenses of the visiting teams, et cetera, et cetera. So the queue is out. The AHL will never come back because we see the NHL teams wanting their AHL teams right next door or close by. Yeah. So the AHL is out. And the ECHL, I think we just didn't burn some bridges there. We blew them up.
We torched them. So what about like the Southern Pro? Like what do we?
Yeah, I mean, where does it go? Yeah. And that's the ultimate. Those leagues. I think the Southern Pro, and I don't know if there's the Western or Central, the Central League. I think
some of them. Look, I don't want to.
Yeah, federal league. Bus leagues, like they're bus leagues.
The Federal League, senior caps, the Herder champs could beat them. Just look at the resumes of both.
Yeah,
I'm not putting that down. I love that you can still. I was just down in Binghamton. They got an F. Federal League is a call, and they sell it out. I mean, whatever, it's each their own. I mean, totally. I'm not, but I'm just saying. In turn, I've watched the hockey. I've seen it. I've looked at the resumes. Guys have come from the Federal League here and gotten cut from the senior teams.
Yeah.
Right now, our senior here is second to none in Canada, our league overall, and the Southern Shore Breakers, who, you know, we go a year late. Just to fill people in that are listening, just for money raising purposes. So, Southern Shore Breakers are going to the Allen Cup. They didn't make the final this year, but they have a chance to win. Like Newfoundland, it works. If you finish last, you get the draft first. So there's a lot of parity. It's a whole little league we got going that's a really awesome league that you could probably consider semi-pro if you in relation to those other. I mean, you know, they're probably paying more money down there, and it's more marketed around, you know, it's still a pro hockey venture, but it's just those last few rungs are no better than senior, and people got that here. So why wouldn't they just go watch senior caps?
You know? Yeah, you're right. You know, my favorite hockey to watch though, Terry, and the one we haven't touched on is university hockey.
Yeah.
And I scouted hockey there, Acadia University. I love that barn, the old Halifax Forum, you know, watching SMU and Dal. SMU's got their own rink now, but just that charm of that building, which is about 100 years old, the Halifax Forum. And UNB right now, I mean, that juggernaut, they would be a competitive ECHL team. I mean, when I was scouting for the ECHL, I could never get UNB players because they were going to NHL or they were signing AHL deals. They wanted like an NHL deal or AHL deal. They wouldn't even look at the ECHL UNB guys, right? So that's hockey that would be amazing here. But there's just no appetite at Memorial University for varsity sports.
Why? I don't understand. If they had it, Dave, and you know what?
Yeah.
If they had it, it would be like when the I think it'd be like when the St. John's Edge came here and Carl English, and all of a sudden, like there's this league that is got a few eyes on it, but we'd be selling out. Like if that's what we had, I think fans would support it just like they did the East Coast. Like you have something to go for. So it's not like local. It's a little bit fresh. That's relevant. A lot of these guys are going to go on, and a lot of these guys we watched on TV win Memorial. Like that's a very relevant league, and I think you'd get 5,000-6,000 going mad. I think it would. Overnight change the whole perspective. So I think they'd make money. What is it? Why don't we ever have a university team?
There's just no interest in varsity sports really at all. We have men's basketball. We don't even have men's volleyball anymore. We have women's basketball. We've got some soccer. But I remember talking to the folks at Acadia and their athletic director there. And he said, Dave, ultimately what fans care about, he said, are three sports, hockey, football, and basketball. And Acadia, of course, had all those teams. And, you know, they that's a university that cares about sports and sees the value in it. I remember going down the Annapolis Valley. I was there in the fall, and I was there for the Doobie Brothers, which you would like with Michael McDonald. And anyways, really? I drove down to the Valley.
With Michael McDonald? You mean Michael McDonald opened up?
Michael McDonald was performing with them, right? Because he was the lead singer in the last half of the Doobie Brothers. All that stuff, right? Anyway,
I forgot all of that. I forgot that Michael McDonald was in the Doobie Brothers for any time. Like, I don't know how, but anyway, okay, that's another conversation we'll have in a little bit.
Anyway, so I drove down to the Annapolis Valley, and come home or the varsity, sorry, the alumni week or whatever, in the fall that they have, and they have football there, and they got the hockey games. And that's to me what a university experience is supposed to be about. Homecoming week, but whatever. And it was awesome, you know, but Munn is just a concrete and steel university, great academic institution in the middle of a highway. And that's it, you know,
but listen,
and alumni too, like the McCain's, I think, donated McCain family and the French fries and everything. $20 million to Acadia University for their sports.
Acadia, okay. I thought they were Dalhousie. I didn't even realize that.
But all those universities tap into alumni and getting these funds to support the programs. But Acadia, Munns just never really, you know, it's a shame. I don't know why our alumni have not stepped up.
Do we have an athletic director? Like, this is because
I don't know. It's an afterthought. People at Munns would be upset to hear this, but they just simply don't care. It's like, and when I'm in Nova Scotia, everyone knows about the Dal Tigers and Acadia Axemen and St. FX Axemen and, you know, Mount Allison even. But like sometimes they go, yeah, Munns is the Seahawks or the Beothics. You know, that's what it used to be going back in the day. So it's kind of, you know, they're sort of familiar with it. And it's a shame, you know, because I think the students would rally behind it. When I was at Munn, there was only one thing that we were interested in other than university studies. It was the Breezeway, was the pub, because there was you didn't go to any sporting events. So there was nothing like that to rally around. And I think they would. With hockey, I think all the residents, students, and stuff would.
For sure. It has to
come from the university, and it has to come from alumni and donors, and I don't see it happening, which is a shame.
If you put it on, there's no team here, say the Growlers, and you really start pumping that in the paper. I mean, it's the sports section paper. I'm sounding like, maybe we'll follow on the, we'll get a talkie too, and maybe a typewriter out, and we'll write some new articles and post them around town. No, yeah. I mean, in the paper, like online, everything, like right. give a little bit more of a glimpse. It's just not out there that much. We have in this small province, which we support things like you might go to an under 12 Atlantic championship and see a place that's packed because, you know, even if you don't have if there's anything in Mount Pearl that's Atlantic Canadian Championship or national, I go watch it, even if I didn't ever play the sport. We're very loyal fans, and, you know, we support all this amateur stuff. And Munn is right there with Memorial University, that is, for those listening, with 20,000 plus students in it and all great facilities. I was out there last night working out with Penny Lane and her soccer team using the field house, second to none. And going in, and there's guys on the swim team with a meet, and there's like four people. I mean, even swimming, you should go watch. It's right there. Yeah. Like if we're competing, I find it, what a missed opportunity all these years. It's not like we're in bumfuck nowhere. Yeah. Like, you know, we're here. At some point, someone will come in. It could be when we're dead. But this is a market, I think, that's not even being attempted.
I tell you, I don't know a lot of people know this story. Actually, I know they don't. I don't even know if it's an interesting story, but when I finished up with the Ice Caps, I was looking for work, and there was a job actually at Munn Athletics for a communications person. It was kind of a step down, certainly from the American Hockey League, and it would have been a step down in salary, a significant one. But I said, you know what, I'm looking for something who could lead to something. Maybe I'm part of the university experience and whatnot. But I went there, and it was a part-time job. It was like 20 hours a week, and I was like, I can't. It's the when I factor in what the pay cut would have been and obviously working part time, I was like, no, like I can't do this job. I remember I was halfway through the job interview. I said, you know what, guys, I can't do it. I can't take a part time job here. But that was their commitment that even for varsity athletics, it was a part time communications job.
Yeah. They don't give a shit. You know what's funny? I don't know if it was the last team, Dave, but my dad did play for Munn when he came back from pro, if you can believe it. So he was 77, maybe 78. It was, I'm not old enough to remember. Yeah. But I've got a picture down there. And I asked him after this was probably 10 years ago, but I was in my 30s, like old enough that I should have known that he played for Munn. I went, what? And he showed me the picture. I said, you've got to be kidding me. And right next to him is I call him Funk, Bob Faulkner. It's Alec Faulkner's or George Faulkner's son.
Yeah.
Bob. I call him Funk.
Yeah.
But anyway, and then they told me a bunch of stories about it, and they're like, it was, we all had a great time, you know, in getting our degrees playing hockey. And I'm like, geez, I wish they had that on the go now. Now, listen.
Doug Grant, St. Louis Blues, Detroit Red Wings play with Munn.
Yes. All right. Yeah, there you go. So you know what you're talking about. Do you think, now Auston Matthews didn't get his 70th. I felt some bad. Did you watch the last couple games?
I did see. It's funny. A guy I know from Mount Pearl, John Rich, said 2 days ago, incoming 70. And those of us in the hockey world know you don't put up, not that that's bulletin board material that the Leafs are going to see, but you don't say things, you don't jinx things. No. And I saw that tweet, you know, that he was saying, oh, 70 goals is coming. And I saw, Jesus, I said, there's the kiss of death right there.
You tried everything. I hate to feel bad for a guy that's just led the National Hockey League for like the fourth or fifth time.
Yeah.
That has millions and millions, just like, you know, there is a level of strip away the money and the fame and everything. And when Kucherov got his 100th and you could see him and look, Matthews, over the years, I've developed a bit of a liking for. Like, he takes it like a man. He really does. I mean, he's not a great fighter, and we're not a fighter, but he does block shots. He goes in. He uses his body. He's not as fluff as a lot of people think. And you could just tell. I think it takes a lot of mental kahunas, man, to just sit there and take all that. And he came off early a couple times. A couple times he did. I mean, he took a lot of shots. That's what he does. But he passed it a few times around the net. And you could just see that this, if it's me and I'm sitting there and 20,000 people and millions all over the world are waiting and I'm probably, and the game's winding down and he looks up and there's 3 minutes left and they pull their goalie in. I just, there's a level of me that said, you know, pity isn't the right word, but I really respect this guy, you know, this athlete. And I hope they win a round or two. Just, I hate it, you know, because he seems to really care and he's a Toronto Maple Leaf. He's signed back there twice. Of course, they haven't been great in the playoffs. But anyway, I just wanted to say that. My question to you is that what do you think we'll see sooner, given the rarity of both? Mm. Someone get 100 assists or someone get 70 goals?
Yeah. Well, you know, the 70 goals is like I said, he was going to get it. He had a couple of games left. You know, the 100 assists, I guess we saw Kucherov, right? My thing with he was, you could see how disappointed he was in the games.
And McDavid.
You know, and McDavid, right. I just sort of almost take him for granted these days. But,
yeah, I know, me too.
He was devastated at the end of the game, you could see, and Keith was trying to console him, and his parents had been following him around the past few games, and they were obviously disappointed.
That's always bad.
The Matthews thing, and I know, look, I'm not a Leafs fan, and I like to tease them online and stuff because they're sensitive. You know, he's a brilliant hockey player. I mean, he's a super skilled player. Arguably the greatest Leaf maybe of all time, you know, certainly doesn't have the playoff success, but what was I lost my train of thought there. Yes, the Keefe situation, sorry, that to me was strange. You know, we're dealing with this distraction and we just want to get this over with, and he seemed really annoyed about it. All you've got to say is like, look, you know, we're getting a lot of attention on this, and I understand why the media market, you know, we hope for his sake, you know, he gets his 70. We'd all like to have it over with. I'm sure he would as well. But, you know, we all hope, he gets the 70 goals and just leave it at that. But to kind of seem annoyed by it all and call it a distraction, basically was just saying, like, this is a pain in the ass and I wish it was over. Was like, that just struck me as odd.
That adds to my frustration, because I look at the guy and it almost like in a weird, bizarre twist that I never would have seen coming. It was almost like a drag for a week. Oh, he shouldn't play. What do you mean he shouldn't play? He's going for 70 goals. Like, there's one team wins the Stanley Cup, 31 go home without it. Yeah. There's other things a fan base wants to see. He wants to see. Give the guy some flowers. There's something about me that was really up, and reporters, a lot of them, that I don't think really sat back and realized that it transcends the game of hockey. And the Leafs haven't had much to cheer about since 67. Yeah. And here's a guy that, now that being said, I'm looking, I knew that he missed a bunch of games, but like when he had 60 a couple of years ago, he missed 10 games.
Yeah.
Right. So there's a chance he does it again. there really is.
I mean, I was looking at some stats the other day. Mike Bossy had 69, I think, in 78, 79, I think his second season or something, or certainly early in his career, and he never did again. So that's why the thing you want to get it when you can. But your point, I mean, he could score 72 next year. He's certainly capable of it. But you want to seal that away when you can. And this was his opportunity, and I feel bad for him. And whether you like the Leafs or Matthews or not, I mean, if you're rooting against him to get 70, you're a pretty hateful person.
I know.
You know, I mean, like, let me have this moment. And it's just great for hockey. And it really would have been cool to see him get 70. Absolutely. It's a special plateau. You know, it's like getting 49 goals in a season. You know, you want 50, right?
Hey, I was telling a story going into my last period of my draft year, which ended up, if you look back, for a lot of reasons, probably my best memories, my best personal hockey year. So we were going in the last game that meant nothing against Portland Winterhawks, and they were in like last place. Literally meant nothing to either team. And I had 48 goals going into the final game, and Damon Lankow was, I think, 2 points up maybe. It was very close for the scoring lead. And Brian Boucher was our goalie, and he played. And I remember Bob Laux asking all of us, and I just didn't want to miss a game anyway, but in the back of my mind, I'm going, are you serious? Like, obviously, I want to play. I want to get 50 goals. I can't say it out loud, but of course I want to play, right? And I would have wanted to play anyway. I don't like missing games. Like, I don't like that, okay, I might have an owie, like, you know, unless I'm actually hurt. And Lanx was going for the scoring, and he didn't want to say anything either, but he's like, of course, play, play, play. And yeah. Brian Boucher just wanted to play. He wasn't chasing anything. He's just like, I don't really want to sit out. I want to play. It's Tuesday. We start against Spokane on Friday, and I want to be limber. So anyway, we played, and then the last period, I still had 48 goals going in the last period, and Bob Laux looked down, and he, remember him saying to the boys, he's like, I'm in the room before, he goes, I'm going to probably play Terry. And there was a guy, Ray Schultz, ended up playing for the Islanders a bit. Sugar Ray Schultz, I call him. He could fight, but he was a decent – he was a defenseman in junior. Didn't have quite those feet, so he played forward in the NHL, beat a few guys up, whatever. But a great guy. He had no goals going in. So he played – Ray scored his first of the year. Place went nuts. I get my 49th with about 9 minutes left, shorthanded. Lanx gives it over to me. Look for me, look for me. It was like Marner and Matthews. He could have slipped it into the net. Gave it to me, and then with about, 28 seconds left, I scored my last goal. And I remember the fans, like, really, and they knew. The fans came to the game knowing that it didn't mean anything. But it was like when I played for the Growlers. I try to tell people, like, it wasn't just my moment here. Like, all these people are here, and they want it. And again, they're paid for a ticket tonight to see me possibly get 50 and to see Damon win the scoring. And outside of that, just to see their team play. And there's a level of, what's the word? Symbiosis. Like, it's all about your team and the fans. And I find those moments are as much to be shared with the fan base as the player. That's just the way I look at it.
You know, and it's all about history too, Terry. And like, whether it's current history or going forward, that year, the scouts were able to say, here's a guy who scored 50 goals and had over 200 penalty minutes.
Yeah.
49 goals. I don't know if they would have said he was a 50 goal
scorer. I don't know. You're exactly right. You can fit it into this sentence. Yeah, exactly. Now you can take my name and put it in the sentence of, well, he did have 50. Yeah. Now you can put it in that sentence, a 50 goal scorer.
And that's what 70
you'd say, well, he almost had 50. Yeah. You know, asterisk, he almost did.
Exactly. And that's what the 70 would do with him. It's all about, you know, whether it's the media or social media. You know, I think Mitch Marner had 99 points the other year.
He did. Yeah.
Still, I remember Silaps, 75-76 Penguins, 99 points. I still remember that. He never got 100 before or after, you know. So
yeah,
that 70 is magical.
Imagine Bernie, if Paul Coffey had gotten
if Bernie Nichols had 69 goals, we'd be like, yeah, 69 goals. He was a 60 goal scorer. Like Dennis Marouk was a 60 goal. Then you're on another level of 60 goals or 60 plus. When you're at 70, Bernie Nichols. Well, Bernie Nichols had a 70 goal season. He was part of that goal.
Yeah.
And that's what Matthews would be and still could be. But it would have been
imagine
nice.
Imagine if Paul Coffey got a couple of goals. He had 48, I think. Right? If it wasn't 48, it was 49.
Yeah, 50 goals.
And nobody, you would talk about the 50, the defenseman had 50 goals, right?
Right.
Meanwhile, it was just like probably like four assists were like shots that would have gone in anyway. They deflected off someone.
Well, it's like the Hall of Fame, Terry, 3,000 hits, you know, 300 wins as a pitcher. That's why those numbers are important, because people like us talk about it and the fans talk about it. And 69 is not 70. You almost, in a way, you almost, you feel better if he had 68, you know, because
I know I would. I think if I was a player, I would. Yeah, I'd go, okay, you know, I needed two anyway. Yeah. But, you know, to say that it and like yesterday, he had so many chances.
We know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice. This week, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code THPN. New customers can bet $5 to get $200 instantly in bonus bets only on DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/hockey for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gambling resources. NHL and the NHL Shield are registered trademarks of the National Hockey League. Copyright NHL 2024, all rights reserved.
Speaking of baseball and wins and losses, so pitching is never, ever going to be the same. Do you think, I don't know what the requirements are getting into the Hall of Fame. I know that as a pitcher, Cy Young, usually you were in the conversation if you had 20 wins, which is never going to be the case. I mean, someone might get it, but it's not as many people. It's not a requirement for the Cy Young anymore because there's just less innings pitched. It is a requirement, wins. I'm just saying they're probably not going to be as many. Right. No hitters, there's definitely won't be as many.
Yeah.
Complete games, there's not going to be as many. But athletes do exist, like Nolan Ryan and many, many more, that kind of thrive on playing a lot. And even though it might be the third or fourth time through the lineup, their mental intuitiveness will – you know, now, okay, now I got to outsmart you. Now I'm going to throw two curveballs when you think I'm going to throw a fat. And you're almost not allowing that anymore. So do we need to come up with a whole new system of requirements for awards in baseball? Or do you think it's going to start slipping back the other way? The extreme example, the last thing I'll say, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, Blake Snell, is it, got taken out. He was pitching a no-hitter in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And he got taken out in the sixth inning and they got lit up. And you're going, well, but the analytics might say it. But, you know, we were going with a hunch here. And the hunch for this Cy Young award winner that had a no-hitter for me would have been leave him in. Now, are we going to think – do you think we're ever going to start bouncing back that way?
You know, it's I hate to be this typical, what they call boomer, right? That with the analytics and stuff. And I think it's a good tool to have, you know, in your back pocket, if it's a tiebreaker or whatever, if you're making decisions. But I think you have to go with the feel for the game. And if a guy's got a no hitter going, especially how rare that is right now, or a complete game, I mean, I think pitchers are still getting hurt. People are still having arm injuries. It's not like we've solved that completely with this new approach of babying them. It's still happening.
It seems
to be more. You know, I think you do, you know, you let the pitcher, if he's, like I said, got a no hitter or a special game going, let him go. I just think, you know, making decisions just because, like, again, I hate to sound like this guy, but because there's a nerd up in the press box with a, you know, computer telling you to change your pitchers. I just think that's ridiculous. And I can't imagine, like, basically, like, now you're asking a manager after the game, why did you make that decision? And I think it was someone recently, I'm hearing it, I'm paraphrasing now, and he would basically said, it really wasn't my decision. I was told by someone else.
Yeah, I think that was Schneider last year.
To change
I can't remember why.
Like, I don't think I'd want to be a baseball manager anymore.
No.
You know, can you imagine guys like, you know, Billy Martin and Earl Weaver, and I'm really sounding old right now, you know, being a manager today? I just don't think they wouldn't do it. They couldn't do it. You know?
They just wouldn't do it.
And no, I think it's a shame. And you're right about the criteria about Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. I don't know what it would be right now. There's so many new statistics to determine, you know, a player's value right now that it's almost kind of above, you know, my pay grade. But yeah, you certainly those
well,
days.
Well, here's the thing. I often look at these statistics, and look, I'm not – analytics really is information, so I'm not really against analytics.
No,
it's always been there to some degree.
Cool.
There's just more information, and to me, it's how you read it.
Right.
So at the beginning of the season, let's just say this is one example, but I can take it and insert it into most situations in most of the major sports right now. But beginning of the year, the Oilers finished – they started. The Oilers, I think, were – they were 2-10 maybe to start the year.
That was horrible.
So
yeah.
A lot of polls came out and they said any other team that finished 2-10, their odds to get into the playoffs, just into the playoffs, are like 2%.
That's right. I know. It seemed impossible.
It seemed impossible. But okay, so that is an analytic, of course. Right. That's information. Every other team that finished started like this. There's only one ever that got in. So I think it was like less than 1%, to be honest with you.
Yeah, because analytics would tell you at that point, Terry, you know, they did fire the coach, but like trade all the players, you know, maybe we got to rebuild.
It would have said that. You're exactly right. Now, if you looked within those 12 games, they were the only team to have most games outshot their opponent. Like the numbers within those 12 games showed you that at some point they're going to explode, whether they change the coach or not. This is a lot of bad luck, and these guys aren't going to miss that much. Now, the next 12 games, I think they went on a bit of a heater, but the analytics within those, shots on goal, chances generated, were pretty much the same. Yeah. So you could read that one way or the other, right? Like you could be on the side of, well, they're going to bust out of this. So of the teams that haven't made it, this is by far the best team. Or
and
you
what
just
analytics go. Don't tell you, Terry, is this team is good enough to win 12 straight games.
Yeah. Yes.
That's the thing. Analytics don't say that. But on paper, if you told me the Oilers, with all the skill they have, just won 10 games in a row, I'd be like, okay, I can buy that. They've got a good enough team to do it. Then analytics doesn't tell you that. It just tells you at this point in the season, they're this far behind, so this season's a write-off, so maybe you make moves based on that. And that's, like I said, that's, to me, some of the frustration. But with baseball, it's like they've just over – I'll use like a Yogi Berra-ism. They've overthunk things right now in my mind, you know, and it's just, it was a beautiful game. You know, the dimensions, everything's just so perfect the way the game was created and the rules and the distance from the mound and all that other stuff, you know, all the nuances of baseball, you know, it was perfect. I don't know why they had to screw around with it, you know?
I know the answer is yes, but have you seen the Ken Burns, Nine Innings Baseball documentary?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, amazing. Yeah.
It was fantastic. Well, you know what? One thing that I love about baseball is that, yeah, he goes over those dimensions over the years and it's like, wow, like this game has stayed pretty much very true to form, not the same, but true to form since it started. You know, it's still the same distance between first and second and the pitcher's mound and home plate and all the things that have happened. But what I love is that you can build a stadium and just put whatever the hell you want. You can put in a green is it in Texas? It starts to go uphill in the outfield. Right. You can put the dimensions, whatever the hell you want. Here's what we're going to do. It's going to be 301 down the line. Nah, 320. Let's settle on 311. Screw it. Let's go for a beer. Like, and everything else is so perfect.
And that's what you talk about that, Terry. Like I was saying to people the other day, there's only one hockey rink I'm interested in going to now. And that's Madison Square Garden. It's because of the history. Everything else to me is the same in hockey. Yeah. All the buildings are, there's no character anymore. The old Boston Garden, Maple Leaf Gardens, Montreal Forum. The only one that's left is Madison Square Garden, which I've never seen a hockey game there. That's the only hockey rink I'm interested in. Baseball, I want to see them all. I've been to Wrigley. I've been to Pittsburgh, which people say is the best in baseball, and I agree. You know, I've been to Fenway. I've been to Yankee Stadium, Mets. So in the past few years, I've started to go more and more baseball games because of like you said, the uniqueness of all the buildings, despite the rules still, like you said, not changing. There's some nuances with the buildings and whatnot, and that's to me, it speaks to the character of baseball and that what I love about it. Like I have no interest, like I said, if I can get to the Rangers in Madison Square Garden, I can never go to another hockey game live, and I could live with it, you know, because I don't need to see the building. But in baseball, there's so many buildings I still want to get to. You know, I still want to go to Camden Yards and San Francisco and Dodger Stadium. And that's the stuff that I love about baseball.
Yeah, yeah. Well said. Me too. If, let's say, basketball, which is the most basketball, I I'm trying to, in my head, because I haven't done my research, but I think more people take games off for load management in basketball. Yeah, would I be correct there?
Yeah.
That's, I mean, like, I suppose in baseball.
Thing, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So
like an 80-game season, and he plays 60, and it's not injuries. It's
And it allows for it from some of the superstars that might be thinking, say, awards, because the leading score isn't an accumulation, it's an average. That's so you can play 60 games and win the leading score.
Yeah.
And someone play 80 games and finish 0.1 of a point behind you and have played a lot more games, but you get it because it's average. So it kind of allows for that. But if all these players, let's just say basketball, hopefully it doesn't trickle into the other sports. Yeah. I mean, I understand that if it's the dead last game of the year, like say, you know, if Matthews already had 70, totally get him sitting out. I get that. But in basketball, it happens in right, as soon as the season starts. Three games in four nights, well, the Stars are taking one of those games off, right? A lot of them. Starting with Kawhi Leonard, and the worst thing is when he made that popular for the Raptors, they won, and it became a thing. Should say the NBA just look at it and go, okay, if all of our star players have to sit out, why don't we just shorten the league? Why don't we just shorten the season?
I was just going to say, Terry, that's my thing about all this. Baseball 162, and it's just special because that goes back to the days of Babe Ruth.
Yeah, and you know as a fan that going in, like you're exactly. Very aware of that.
And that's
going
the
in.
Charm. You have afternoon games. You can play doubleheaders. Yeah. Baseball's a little different. I think the hockey season should be around 70. I think basketball should be around 70.
I agree.
Someone said to me the other day that the Stanley Cup should be out by May 24th weekend. I have no problem with it, with any of that. I tend to agree with it. It's not going to happen because of greed, but that's what the leagues have created. They want these 82 game schedules. They want their stars to play all the time. The Stars are basically pushing back and saying, you may have an 82 game schedule, but I'm not playing it. And it wouldn't be surprised if it trickled into hockey at some point. And that'd be a shame, but I think that speaks to the volume or speaks volumes to the fact that the seasons are too long. They should be about 70 games. And that's the thing I love. My true sport that I actually watch the most live is football because the games are so meaningful. You know, you lose two or three games, you're done. You know, whereas in hockey, you can lose two or three games in 2 weeks and you're fine. And I just think the games would be more meaningful if the schedule was shorter, but it's never going to happen because of money. If anything, they'll have these preseason tournaments like NBA has, and they'll find a way to stretch it out before they shorten it. But I wish they would, but they won't.
Yeah, okay, you're with me. I don't think it'll happen either, but I mean, to me, it's just logical math. Just look, if you want to talk analytics, there's your first one, owners, right? Yeah. Smacking you right in the face.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay. Do you have time? I got to take off soon, but I usually do a rapid fire randoms section, and we're going to do a real short version of that. Maybe 5 minutes. Are you all right with that?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, here we go. Dave Salter, rapid fire randoms. Favorite jersey of all time in any sport? Actually, give me your favorite hockey jersey and then your favorite non-hockey jersey.
So tough. Well, the Minnesota Fighting Saints that your dad played with, that logo is amazing. I love the Cincinnati Stingers, WHA. The WHA had so many great ones. I love the old purple and gold Kings, North Stars I love. There's so many, but the WHA had so many great ones.
Yeah, the WHA were awesome. And what about outside of hockey?
Outside of hockey, I like a lot of the cartoon logos. I like the old Milwaukee Bucks logo, Yankees, you know, the classic Yankees logo with the top hat and the bat, you know, the other alternate logo that they use. Yeah. I'm trying to think. Hockey has, to me, in my opinion, hockey has some of the best logos of all sports. You know,
I think so. I think my favorite, I've never really swayed from Chicago. I love that.
Oh, you know what I love? The Milwaukee Brewers with the bat and the glove shaping the MB.
Good colors, too.
That's brilliant, to the Brewers. The Brewers
football
logo
is kind of not in the running. It's just numbers, really, for the most part.
Yeah, football. I do like the old New England Patriots, the Patriot Pat, you know, the cartoon, guy. And I love the old Buccaneers, Buccaneer Bruce, Bucko Bruce, the old orange colors. So I like the Pats and the Bucks, I would say, in football. But I'm like old school, right?
Okay, so you're going on a trip to Mars. You're going. It's going to be 3 months each way. We've come up with some sort of spaceship that can do that. But you need you've got so all that way, but you can only take three albums with you. So not necessarily your favorite, because I might lay off the Beatles because I don't want to get sick of them. So like an album maybe that you haven't heard in a while, like three of those that you would that would entertain you. For me, maybe I'd pick a double album because of the length. Mm. You know, you're 3 months each way, but that's all you have is three albums worth of songs. Which ones do you pick? It could be a straight album, could be a greatest hits, whatever.
I have to have Steely Dan in there because that's my all-time favorite group, and I will never, ever, ever get sick of them.
Senior's going to love that you said that. There's a tough one because you could take Steely Grand's Greatest and still not even have scratched the surface on their, like, that's an album cut band. puck if I've ever heard one.
Absolutely. So I would take Asia by Steely Dan for sure. Get some Stones in there if I need to rock out. Maybe Hot Rocks, the greatest hits from the 70s. And maybe something mellow, maybe some Joni Mitchell, Court and Spark. How about that?
Just listened to that the other day. I always, at the end of each night that Penny Lane's here, we mix it up, but I'm like, we got to watch something educational. A lot of times that'll be a video, or I consider that. I'm like, you know, you like Juice Newton? Well, here's the video, Queen of Hearts. Oh, that looks like the 80s. Yes, it is. You know, you're still learning history when you do that stuff. But anyway, we watched Joni Mitchell live just with a guitar. I can't remember where, but it was 1971. It was quite the concert.
Brilliant.
Amazing what YouTube can do, right? I say to my buddies, I'm like, why wouldn't you pay this subscription? Like,
and it's funny the influence our music has on our kids, Terry, because, you know, I was watching, I think it was Better Call Saul or some TV show, and the guy was in the supermarket, and there was a Steely Dan song playing, and my son, or I think it was Steely Dan, or maybe it was some Yacht Rock song that I also love. It might have been...
Christopher Cross.
It's someone, and my son commented, I was like, how do you know that? And he's like, Dad, I'm in the car with you all the time. And the songs are subliminally, to me anyway, if infiltrating his brain. And I think previously my daughter as well, but definitely my son is influenced. It's not like he's sitting down and listening to music with me, but where I have music on all the time, he's kind of a prisoner. And it's funny.
He
knows all that stuff.
Yeah, for sure. How many fish burgers have you ever eaten?
You know what? The filet of fish a few years ago, it's so funny you say that. I was at McDonald's and I said, you know, I've never had a filet of fish in my lifetime. I don't know why it hit me. And I said, one of these days, it has to be off the menu. Who has bought one? How is it still there?
Unbelievable. Yeah.
And I find one day, I don't know, it was a random day. I said, I'm getting a filet of fish. And I had one and it was very underwhelming. And I'm shocked that it's still on the menu. I don't know why, how it is.
I'd never had one. Jason Hedges and I were playing hockey for the Mount Pearl Blades in 2010, and I'd never had one. And the thing is, we're in Newfoundland, so I like the idea of the fish burger. So I said, well, I might as well. But yeah, you're right. I'm like, it's better at Chess's or wherever. I don't know why I'm plugging
them. Yeah, I know. So it's very unfilling.
Yeah, I'm in Newfoundland. Why would I order a fish burger from McDonald's? But the whole idea of that, I would go and get like double fish burgers. So I wondered, and the reason, our reasoning was it exactly yours. It was after a game, and we were like, who's ever ordered one? How has pizza come and gone? The spicy chicken, all these things, those sandwiches that they had a few years ago, and these things come and go. Yet the filet fish stays on the menu.
Like, I don't know if it's part of some sort of McDonald's constitution that they have to have it in there. Like when whoever is, you know, formed the company that no matter what happens with a change of stand, you have to by constitution keep filet fish on. Because I can't imagine anyone's actually buying it. But I just bought it one day thinking randomly, like, this is going to be gone soon. And I'll never be able to say I had one. So I did it. And it's brutal.
Okay. Same thing now. You've got to pick, you're on the same trip, and you got to pick three movies.
Wow. You know what I watched recently, and I hadn't seen it in a while, was Shawshank Redemption. That was brilliant.
That's next on Penny Lane's list. I'm showing her movies. And I tend to stay away. I mean, a bunch of guys in a prison for a 14-year-old girl, but some of those, not that, I'm just saying for subject matter, I could, because it's one of the best movies of all time. I think most people, one of, it's so subjective, but it's certainly not a bad movie. I think a lot of people would say it's great. So I think now she's old enough to get it. I think the message transcends like the boredom that could result from if you were a kid watching that movie.
Same thing with classic movies. I went through a period in the 80s when I didn't have a girlfriend in high school, and me and my buddy, you know, would go to the video stores and rent everything. So I saw, you know, On the Waterfront, Streetcar Named Desire.
Those are two great ones.
You know, all the classics. What's the one? The one that is regarded as the greatest of all time, Rosebud.
Citizen Kane. I just watched that again the other day.
I've seen all of the classics, but I will say in recent memory, I will say Shawshank. But the movie that I've seen the most, and it's not even close, is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
I know. God, unbelievable. So I can't believe you're saying these. Penny Lane and I watched that on the way back from Orlando just a couple months ago. I'm like, planes, trains, and automobiles getting back. And she goes, what? I've heard that saying. I go, well, you've heard the saying, of course, because you've seen the movie, right?
You're like a Chatty Cathy doll, except I'm pulling the string. that movie, I think it's brilliant. It's touching. It's funny. John Candy. So that to me, I know, like I
much
said,
more touching than you think at the end. I had a little bit of teary-eyed goosebumps. I forgot that part was going to hit
Marie is gone. It's not Citizen Kane, but I have to tell you, it's the movie I've watched the most.
And I watched Citizen Kane again. I saw it years ago. Underwhelmed wouldn't be the word, but I didn't have an appreciation. I was like, oh, it's pretty good. You know, it was a long time ago. But now I don't want to seem like film world industry pretentious. Yeah. But when you see how early that was and how the shots added up.
I think it was kind of the impactfulness of that movie. It was just so different than anything that had come before.
The way they use the cameras and shadowing and everything and lighting. Yeah. Now I get it. I'm like, oh, that was 1940 or like they're in thereabouts, 41, I think. Yeah. Okay. Now I get it. Right. And then other movies.
It's funny.
You might go.
Yeah.
See a movie in 1948 and go, well, that's much better because it's almost a decade. Yeah, but it wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for this one, right? Yeah. Like now I see. Okay, go ahead.
You know, so many other, I'm just thinking out now, Midnight Express, Deer Hunter, a lot of those movies like in the 70s. There's so many. It's so, I think I could pick music much more than movies. Movies is, it's because it all depends what mood you're in too, right?
You're like, right.
You know, I also love Anchorman because it's silly and funny and I've done TV and I love old school because we've all wanted to go back and go to a fraternity and relive our youth again. So, you know, it's tough. That's the tough one for me is movies, to be honest with you. But I will say the number one that I've watched hundreds of times probably is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
That's a great answer. It is. It's a lot harder for me too. I never thought about it that way, but there's probably a reason. Usually, even with music, when I get into an artist, I can go lyrics like Bob Dylan, or there's a guy, John Gorka, I love. And if it wasn't for his music, I got into the words first. But most of the time, it's a beat or a hook or something like that grabs me. And I think that part is like mathematical in my head. Like it's tough for me not to like, I don't know, something obvious, I don't know, that I heard for the first time, Taking Care of Business. You know, I don't know, there's a guitar, there's a beat. I'm 5 years old. I like this. Right. I don't see ever not liking it because it adds, but I might watch, I don't know, a movie like Austin Powers. And over time, It might go in and out of like how much I really like this movie. And, you know, there's certain things and nuances and where I am in life might matter. But with songs, it's often like, okay, I really like that. Like it's hard for me not to like, I don't know, Twist and Shout. I go back to those easy ones because when you're a kid, that's the first thing that grabs you. You don't give a shit what Bob Dylan wrote on Highway.
Steely Dan wouldn't grab you when you were probably 7 years old.
There's a great example, but Dad played it so much that I'm going, okay, now I kind of get it. Asia was a great example. AJA for those doing the looking it up. That's a great example, right? If I heard that, if that was just there in the corner and I knew nothing about them and I was only to hear it once, it's over. Yeah. But after a while, okay. Yeah. If you could pick one superpower, what would it be?
Everyone wants to say flying or something, right?
Most people say flying or invisibility.
I think the ability maybe to read people's minds.
That's a fantastic
answer. I want that better than flying.
I think you could do more with that for sure.
Yeah. I can get on a plane anytime.
You could, and you could still have, if you were invisible, it would spill over into criminality somehow. Like, you know, there's a lot of creepiness there. You know, what are you going to be invisible for? But if you would read people's minds, you could use it for that. But, you know, I could use anything. I make moral decisions right now. I have access to do whatever. I can go over and murder my neighbor Lucy if I want to. I won't. So I think if you could read brains, if it was me, I'd just make sure that I had a nice little setup for my family and I wouldn't need to know the secrets to the world. I guess it would be how you use that power.
But you know, it'd be pretty boring superhero just to be able to read minds. I'd need some sort of like punching power or something, speed or something.
If you could read minds though, you would be able to have that because you could read the minds of the best scientists in the world and you could go figure it all out on your own. I think it would take a long time. It would be like being a, a reporter.
We'd have to flesh out the character, because I think as a kid, like mind reader guy, you know, probably wouldn't be that exciting to the average kid.
It wouldn't. No, it certainly wouldn't. You'd also, if you could read minds, I guess you could technically do anything you wanted to do. I could be a pilot, because I just take a pilot with me. Right. Whenever I'm doing wrong, I'm going to read the pilot's mind.
Terry needs to
know why the first thing would be fly a plane.
Leave her soon, or we're going to
Yeah. If you were on death row, what would the meal be?
The first thing that came to mind, Terry, is I love comfort food, like mashed potatoes and meatloaf, you know what I mean? Or meatloaf and mashed potatoes, I guess. Something like that, probably, because you're going to die, so you'd probably want something comforting. I guess you could say steak or, you know, whatever. But, I would say some sort of comfort food item, because, you know, I'm going to die.
I've eaten so strictly the last few years that I don't even, like, remember. Fries and gravy or poutine, or I mean, I do remember, but I just don't eat that enough now. Not that I'm immaculate here. I eat like, you know, I guess if I'm going to spoil, I'll have pastas, but a lot of the real greasy stuff is just kind of been eliminated.
Yeah, good for you.
My toolbox. Yeah. You know, and I just try. I snack at night, but I can't have the Doritos, because if I do, I'll eat them. So it's like cashews and things like that. Not like overly healthy, but it ain't some of the things I want. I would definitely go right in as fatty as it could possibly. I mean, you're going to die the next day, right?
Right.
Okay. Last question I have for you. We're at an hour exactly. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hypothetically, in this world, all these players are in their prime. My team doesn't matter, but you and I are going against each other. You have to pick five players and a goalie. And I don't know, we're going to have a simulation or whatever we're going to have that can play together and try to beat my team. Now, you can't have Lemieux, Gretzky, or Howe.
Gretzky or
so the top four players you can't pick, and no Montreal Canadiens.
Okay.
But you can pick anybody else, three forwards, 2D, and a goalie.
You know what? This is for like the Stanley Cup or something, obviously, right?
It's funny. The goalie, $1 billion on the table in between.
The goalie that jumps out at me, it seems kind of random, but it's the first one that came to my head because I'm thinking I'm going to want to win the cup. Is Billy Smith in net? I know that's kind of, you know, you don't think it's maybe
or cup straight,
you know, or Wah or Brodeur or whatever. But I'd go there. On defense. I would go Lidstrom and Denny Pothin. I just love that he could play it both ways and he could hurt you.
Incredible. I was talking about him 2 weeks ago, how he's underappreciated in the history of hockey. I don't know how this guy went. But people go right to like Larry Robinson and Doug Harvey. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. 80s. Maybe to go Paul Coffey. I'm like, my God, how is Dennis Pothin forgotten about? 100 points, defenseman, first overall, lived up to his rep, four cups straight. Come on.
Built a franchise around team, right? And so up front, I've got Lemieux. I'm allowed to have him, right?
No, you're not allowed Lemieux. Well, Gretzky, Howard.
So I can't have Lemieux or Howe. Is that the ones?
Or Gretzky, the top four. Mount Rushmore players are undisputed, I think, in hockey.
I'll go Messier. And so now I've got a couple.
And you can have you don't have to have wingers. You can have three center if you want.
These okay. Yeah, this is tough when you got those other guys off the list. Messier, give me a second here.
That's all right. I can throw out some possibilities. Some people might say Sid the Kid. Connor McDavid's on the board. Stevie Eiserman's on the board.
Yeah. I'm gonna go Eiserman, Messier. And, I guess funny, you're going to think I'm an Islanders fan, and it's not because I grew up in that era.
They did win four cups that people forget about.
I'll go, if I'm on a cup, I'm going to go Messier, Eiserman, and Brian Trottier.
What a great, I like those answers because Trottier is one of the most underrated players in the history of the NHL. I'm absolutely convinced, as is Pothin. As are the fucking New York Islanders from 79 to 83.
Was so tough. He was not a big man either, but tough as nails.
And then went over to Pittsburgh and won a couple with them.
I remember in 84, they were going for their fifth cup and they played the Canadians in the semifinals. And he hit Bob Gainey, who was no slouch and a big, strong man, and almost killed him. This is Trache. And he's still arguably that, you know, at the time it was him and Gretzky one and two. So here's like something Gretzky wouldn't do. You know what I mean? Yeah. Trache was out there, you know, physically laying bodies out and contributing to the scoreboard greatly. And he was just probably the greatest, quite possibly the greatest two-way player of my lifetime, Brian Trache. So it's funny. They're names I wouldn't have come up with before this conversation necessarily, but they're the ones that wow. leaped out to me. So if I have to go to war with Messier, Trache, and Yzerman up front, and Potvin, and Lidstrom on defense, and Billy Smith in net, I'll take my chances.
I absolutely love your list. It's unique and it's legit, and you can make an argument against any team I could possibly put together. Thank you very much, Dave Salter. Do you have anything to add? Do you have anything to plug? And by the way, we'll get you back a few times. I like having some, it's often stories with old buddies. Not only are you an old buddy though,
yeah.
but I need once in a while to ask some relevant current questions, and I'm glad you can be there for that. So we'll have you back here.
So much fun, Terry. Of course, you know, I think about doing this today. I remember, you know, writing that story when you were drafted in that bantam draft.
It was still have that, by the way,
of the Telegram sports section. You know, 14 yeah. years old, and so we go back a long time. And I love you, and I love the fact that you're not just a hockey guy. You're a music guy. You're a pop culture guy, and I think that's why we get along so well. It's because the hockey's one thing. That's a given. It's all the other stuff that you bring to the table that I enjoy so much, and that you're yourself, and you know, you've taken your lumps along the way, and now look at you, you know TV star and the hockey world star, and you know, everyone loves you, and you did it your own way, and like I said, you took some stones along the way, although you're a Beatles fan, and
thank you,
and that's why I'm playing one for you, and but you know, I'm just so happy for all your success, and it's always fun to chat. We don't do it enough.
No, we don't. I appreciate it because you really have seen a lot of people now that go, oh, so you just went from hockey and you got into acting. I'm like, man, you guys don't know. There was so many ups and downs, and you more than anybody, because, hey, we're buddies for a long time. And when yeah. I mentioned us on air, we still knew each other way before that. I really do still have that article at my parents' house. Yeah. Mom keeps everything, as do I for the most part, but I have that. And we've shared similar, you're probably not in the public eye as much, but definitely have pursued different career opportunities. You're never really settled into one thing. You're always thinking about other possibilities. How can I further myself? Maybe I'll take this job. You just mentioned you thought about the MUN job. I've done that. I've gone, okay,
yeah.
I'm going to make less doing this, but I'm probably going to further myself a little bit more in this category, or else I wouldn't have this podcast and I wouldn't be an actor. As you know yourself right now, you got two great children.
Yeah.
You figured out yourself. You're very comfortable in what you're doing, and now you've worked in not only hockey, but you've reported, you've worked in all kinds of areas. You work for the government, and you know, you don't seem to, I'm not going to say be happy, but you're always a happy, positive guy that's got insight, but you're very well-rounded, and you're never complacent. You know, yeah. you're always,
no, that's you might the thing. Say I think me, people like me and you are always chasing after something, you know, and we're not one to kind of just settle into something comfortable. And sometimes that makes the path is a little rougher for people like me and you, maybe that want that always aspire to something different, or maybe get bored after a few years and want to do something else. Yeah. But I think we're the people, if I sound egotistical here a little bit, certainly you, but we're the people that maybe have more interesting stories than the person that does the, you know, they're the accountants and then they die. You know, maybe they've got a more comfortable life. Maybe they've got more money than us. But I think at the end of the day, you know, it's all about experiences
yeah.
you meet. I think we've got the more interesting stories. I tell myself that anyway.
That's an incredible way to put it and a great way to end it. Thank you very much, Dave Salter. Folks, if you're in St. John's, Newfoundland, you want to go to George Street, you want a beer, you just want to relax, you want to see some live music, you just want to hang out in one of Canada's coolest streets, I would start with Trinity Pub. I'd make my way down and I would go to Rob Roy Confusion, the Martini Bar for sure. I'd go to Greensleeves. And of course, Turkey Joe's or TJ's Pub now, and the Bull and Barrel. If I wanted to go for a bite to eat, I would start with Loose Tie. I'd check out Merchant Tavern and also Blue on Water. I'd also go to the East End, Peter Wedgwood, Wedgwood Cafe, for a nice lunch. They also do catering. If I wanted to improve my life and have strength and balance for the body and mind, I would go to Rope Walk Lane. I'd go to Ryan Power, ex-pro hockey player and unbelievable trainer. Strength and balance for the body and mind. Power conditioning on Rope Walk Lane. Two locations for Mr. Lube, run by my buddy Chris Sparks, one of the best athletes ever from this province. One's on Torbay Road, one's on Kenmount Road. Live, laugh, Lube. Pitbull Pain Relief, the pain sticks that just don't quit. Go to pitbullpainrelief.com, see what all the fuss is about. And, of course, True Hockey, take what's yours. Folks, I'll be back in just a few days with more Tales with TR. Catch you guys on the rebound.